The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hello and welcome to The Ball Bags, a weekly podcast breaking down all the news from the United Rugby Championship, the NFL, the English Premier League, the NBA, and the wide world of sport. Hello, and thanks very much for tuning into the final episode of Season 2 of the Ball Bags podcast. Unfortunately, the bottom feeder, Atlee, couldn't be with us. He has been drawn down with a case of the baby back, bitches. But I am delighted to be joined by the coach. How are you, mate?
Ever dependable. Look, I've been better. I feel like that's a lot lately, I think.
Yeah.
I think my form possibly replicates... My form kind of goes ahead with like Liverpool's form, but it shouldn't, because I'm not like that. I'm not passionate, kind of. I don't feel like I get dragged into stuff, but yeah, it's been a tough couple of weeks as a Liverpool fan. But anyway,
mate, there was a time in our podcast career where you were fully invested in Rangers season just because of who was over.
Yeah.
So you do get drawn in.
Yeah. There was that time. Yeah, look, it was a disappointing night last night. Probably feeling a little bit sorry for myself. A little bit too much dizzy water. But, yeah. Look, we're coming to the end of a long slog. It'd be nice to get a break, get the sun on the skin, and rejuvenate. But yeah, what about yourself? How are you?
Yeah, I'm alright. I didn't have a great weekend either. Obviously, Leinster lost, and I might say the Raiders as well. The NRL, they lost as well. So, didn't have a great weekend sports wise. But look, I just thought they were great games.
Did you think the Champions League final was a great game?
I thought it was very tense. Yeah, I thought from a neutral's point of view, it was a good game. The first half for a nil all was brilliant.
Okay.
But yeah, look, we'll get to all that later. But to kick us off, to get the juices flowing, it's only going to be a quick podcast, this one, folks, so stick with us. The Player of the Week, in association with our good friends, usasports.co.uk. Just click the link in the podcast description to peruse the wide variety of American sporting apparel. It's getting hot, it's getting sunny. Maybe you want a nice little singlet, a nice little basketball jersey for the summer months. Who knows? But look, coach, who was your player of the week and why?
Yeah, unfortunately, my player of the week was Thibaut Courtois. I think if you look back at the game last night, and you know, as you said, it was a good game for neutral. Courtois pulled out some amazing saves. Particularly if you look at the stats and the sheer amount of chances Liverpool had on target and off target. But I think Madrid had two chances, scored one, or two on target, scored one. You know, he definitely deserved it. Like, he was next level.
Yeah. 9 saves, record since, most saves since 2004. Champions League final, read that this morning. You know, he was good. He features heavily in this episode, I can tell you. He may also be in the, have you seen this?
Who's your player of the week?
Yeah, mine, it's in a vein similar to yourself.
Yeah.
It's Ronan O'Gara. I just thought, look, Leinster weren't obviously at the races yesterday. It was a poor performance from them. We'll get to that later. But I thought, yeah, happy for Raj. 3 finals in a row. Good to finally get over the hump. Yeah, not much more to say. I think everyone was kind of happy for Raj. So that's who I give my player of the week to. If you had to pick one.
Oh, it's got to be Raj. It's got to be Raj. Because, let's be honest, Courtois beat Liverpool. It's been great for Raj. Like, couldn't be really happier for him. He deserved it.
Yeah, fair. With that in mind, we might kick into kind of the little bit I was just going to cover, just a quick synopsis of Champions Cup final yesterday. So look, obviously Leinster, obviously we would be Leinster men or whatever, we're rooting for them, but I think everyone was kind of happy for Rog. And it was a tenth game too.
Yeah. Paddy Power took all of my money, all of it.
You couldn't. Was there a lot?
Too bad. Don't bet and stay in school, kids.
Sure. Yeah, don't bet.
Very tense. Yeah, it was actually, you know, it was a good game. It was.
Yeah. obviously the parallels between the picture that's been doing the rounds a lot has been 13 years ago, the Leinster Munster semi-final in the Aviva. Sexton could be Sexton's last chance to win a Heineken Cup. You think you maybe make it one more crack at it? If Roger was the man to deny him putting that fifth star on the Leinster jersey, given in mind he's been involved in all of them, would be kind of a nice end for Roger. I do think what it did potentially answer for us as Irish fans is something you've chatted about for a long time, is that Rog maybe is the next Irish manager and seems well fit to do it, should he choose to.
And that's the thing, I think he does actually have a choice. It's a strange one where I actually think the ball is in his court. Like, if he someday turned around and wanted to do it, I don't see anyone stopping him. But also, I don't know if you noticed yesterday, sorry, a little bit of an off topic, but the atmosphere in that stadium was brutal.
There was
a lot of empty seats.
Well, see, it was a trek not just for Irish fans, but for
La Rochelle, La Boom,
La Rochelle, like the French, but they're not east of France. It's like a small part of France. It's not a huge area. You also wonder about, like, they're kind of 4 years in the top 14. 5 years ago, they were in Pro D2, which is the second division. So they've kind of had a meteoric rise. Have they risen too quickly to have that kind of long-standing fan base? Like, I think if Toulouse are in that final, Toulon are in that final, you go back years ago, Perpignan, Biarritz, if they're in that final, fan base is largely bigger. But look, take nothing away from it. Now, what I would say is, while the atmosphere disappointed, I thought the pitch and stadium, they were immaculate for a final.
It's a funny one, actually, because just mentioning there, like, it's a massive world sports scheduling problem there. The same weekend, like, I know people that went to the Leinster game and that, and the routes they had to take were kind of crazy, like, considering you should be able to fly to France relatively easy from Dublin. People going to Eindhoven and just, you know, different places to get down to it. To have a Champions League final, two European Rugby Cup finals, and, you know, the Monaco Grand Prix all on one weekend in one country, it seems a bit bizarre.
Yeah, now the only thing I would say is the rugby finals were obviously decided to be in France a long time before the Champions League final was decided to be. And that was very much a decision that was taken out of their hands. It was like, where can we host this? Where would have the infrastructure to host this on short notice? And it was decided Paris. Now, we can get to that later. That probably has proven to be not a great decision. But look.
On the game itself, or, well, we had a debate last night. As in, I suppose my circle of friends is there's a mix of Leinster and Munster fans. And the debate was over, you know, how much credit can Rog take for this for the last kind of 4 or 5 years? Like, in my opinion, like, he can take an awful lot, because my argument was that they were kind of saying, no, it's John O'Gibbs, he assembled this team. Yeah, okay, he might have put them together as a director of rugby, but Rog was head coach at that point as well. Like, he's delivered the style of play.
I think it's a combination of three factors. So they spent quite well in that. Like, they bought in Will Skelton. They've bought in these big name players. John O'Gibbs, you argue, kind of a man with a nightmare Champions Cup final last year, was brilliant for them again last night in IA West. Now, he was kind of like an NPC or a like a domestic rugby player in New Zealand and kind of had played a bit of Super Rugby, but he was no great shake. And he's been brilliant for La Rochelle. So that probably goes to John O'Gibbs and kind of scouting that talent and bringing him to La Rochelle. And then you look at players they have that are now in the French squad that weren't in the French squad when they broke out of kind of La Rochelle, and like Dante and stuff like that, and the centres and stuff like that. But it's a combination of all three. They obviously have had, I don't know the full story, but they've obviously had a colossal cash injection to sign these big name players. John O'Gibbs is obviously doing a brilliant job. There was kind of raps on him at Ulster. He'd done a brilliant job. And then Ron Nogara is probably a bit of a coaching savant at this stage, having spent the time in the places he spent. Like, he spent a lot of time in Christchurch, obviously. Yeah. Centre of excellence, that is Canterbury Crusaders. Like, they're always there or thereabouts. So I think it's a three-pronged attack, and it's worked quite well for La Rochelle. The question is, how sustainable is it? If it is largely based on that cash injection, are they going to rise and kind of almost have a Toulon-esque fall?
Yeah, look, it's funny. If they can manage to keep it sustainable, it'll be excellent, because it's a funny one, though, because how do you keep a club of that size sustainable? Like, it's not as if they're in a huge city which can gain new fans, for example. They're in a very small town, I suppose, is the best way to say it.
Yeah, like, we've seen clubs like that before. Especially in France. Like, I don't know if you remember, years ago we used to have Bourgoin used to always play Leinster. Like, they're a small remote village, but they were doing really well in the top 14, and they never really went anywhere. But then you've also seen sides fall. Like, Perpignan are in the Pro D 2 still, I think. They've had a massive fall from race. Biarritz are not the side they once were. Toulouse are always there or thereabouts. Like, they're a bit of a factory. A lot of people said once Guinovez moved on, they wouldn't be the same, but they're fine. Toulon kind of had that rise and then fall. Toulon's a bit, it's a town, it is a like a big-ish town, but it's a town nonetheless. And in the grand sporting landscape, you look at kind of leagues, it's cities that support major franchises, not towns. Burnley versus Manchester, for example. So I don't know how sustainable it is, really, to be honest, which I think you look at, like, say, you like of a Clermont model, which it's a small area, but they're backed by Michelin tires. So they're backed by wealthy families.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's interesting. It's interesting. And, you know, you come back to Leinster yesterday. They didn't have enough in the tank, did they? Like, I thought Hugh O'Keane had a really, really poor game.
A lot of them did. The only one of note, really, was thankfully awarded the European Player of the Year, and Josh Van de Vlier, because he definitely deserves it. Touching moment, actually, he got the award was given to him by, obviously, the late, great Anthony Foley and his two sons. I don't know if you've seen the picture. It's a picture, you try to find it out, and basically it's the youngest son, Josh Van de Vlier, Axel's wife, and then his eldest son, who's 16. He's the size of a man, and he's already played for Munchens, apparently. So keep an eye out on him. 16, he's played first team rugby.
Nice.
Some good genetics. But yeah, kind of nice to see. And look, I don't think Leinster would. They were off the boil. They didn't perform well. They'll take that on the chin, and they'll look to finish out the season with maybe a European title.
But do they care now, though? Like, the URC titles, I don't want to end something with silverware, I suppose. Glasgow, and then look, who they have after that is, I don't know. We'll see. Ulster have played some good rugby this season.
Yeah, Munster have been a lot better since the whole round three announcement. The South African sides are going to be dangerous. There was a thing, the URC had kind of, okay, the rugby attention has left the Champions Cup. They got their posts, their social media posts in this morning. But they did post, though, which is quite interesting. You wouldn't have thought this at the start of the season. In terms of North versus South, so all the Northern Hemisphere sides versus all the Southern Hemisphere sides, South Africa's killing it. They have 31 wins to 16.
Wow, okay.
So, South African sides have definitely come good. And I think if you were a Leinster right now, you'd be saying, yeah, no, fuck it. Let's go win the first URC. It's, do you know what I mean? It's a chance to be a name in the history books. I don't know why they wouldn't go after it. And they'll likely be at home the whole way through. Well, they will, obviously.
I know we spoke about before, but you look at the Leinster team that they put out or various rounds of URC, it has to be time that we either have a fifth province or let's invest in a club in England or
I actually think we need to redistribute talent. So there's a stat up when Leinster bet Munster comprehensively that some young scrum half come on, his name escapes me. He was the 60th player to play for Leinster this season. To have 60 players play first team rugby is too much.
Yeah.
I know they're all being produced in Leinster. That's fair. Like, I'm not saying there's any cheating going on or whatever, but if you can get 60 players to play first level rugby in a season, you've too many. You're not doing them, the young fellas trying to come through, any favours. I think the wealth may need to be redistributed.
Could we do a draft style system in Ireland?
Technically we could. I mean, arguably you could say the players aren't being produced by Leinster, they're being produced by the school systems.
Yeah.
Of which case Connacht is the weakest school system. And then it's probably head to head for, and it's not the Ulster school system, it's the Belfast school system. And then the Munster school system. So, yeah, you probably could look at maybe a draft system or maybe just look to get more players involved. Like, you look at, say, Ross and Harry Bourne. Now, I'm not a huge fan of Ross Bourne. And it's probably too late now because Ben Healy seems to be kind of coming through at Munster. But if Harry Bourne was this great big shake, why wasn't he sent to Munster? Why wasn't he sent to Connacht? Like, why is he not? I get the competitive edge and stuff like that, but if the RFU has the control they do, why they're not trying to get their players playing?
Is there not
top level talent?
Is that not kind of a disrespectful thing going, well, if he's not good enough for Leinster, let's send him to Connacht because they're muck effectively? No?
Maybe it is. Maybe you're right, to be fair. Now, when I hear it said back to me, it seems strange, but I just think Leinster have too many players.
Or maybe, like, do you allow at 17 years of age, when schools rugby games are happening, should Connacht or Ulster or whatever be coming to watch Dublin school games and going and offering them deals there and then?
But why stop there? Why just,
sorry, yeah, like, but do you know what I mean? Why? You know the way it is in Dublin, you get your Michaels and your Blackrock players and whatever, and they go into Leinster Academy. Well, why not offer them academy spaces in other provinces before Leinster get there?
Fair.
But I suppose how do you make that space?
I'd imagine it's a lose-lose situation. Or? Well, for Connacht, like, so say Connacht, Munster or Ulster, for example, are down watching Terenure versus Michaels. And Connacht come in and like, here, look, really thought you were brilliant, really love to help develop you here, can you get involved with Connacht Academy? And they're like, well, I'm doing my leaving cert, so I'm not going to commit to that. And then they win a senior cup, well, and then they go, well, look, here's a contract for you, Dublin or Galway. I can still go to UCD and see if the Leinster thing works out, or I can go to NUAG and see if the kind of thing works out. And I think if you're a Dublin lad, you're probably going to stick with Leinster,
because you would have to imagine the second and third rate players in Dublin private schools or whatever you want to call it, Leinster schools rugby, probably better than the first string version in Connacht. Like, and that's, I don't know what's down to coaching, investment, you know.
I don't know if that's necessarily true, because if that was the case, Leinster would never have signed Robbie Henshaw.
Is he the enigma, though?
Do you know what I mean?
No.
I just think we do produce good rugby players all over the country. I just think it's a harder slog for them.
Well, it's competitiveness, isn't it? If you're playing at a higher level every week, it's like that saying, you know, play with shit, play like shit. So
yeah, it's the numbers in Leinster versus numbers elsewhere. And that's why the majority of Munster players come from Limerick and Cork. That's why there's not a lot of Tipperary rugby players, and there has been one or two, but there's not a lot.
One thing I found yesterday when we come back to that kind of the depth and players and all that sort of stuff is Ross Byrne, was he kind of Ronan O'Gara's secret weapon? Like, I mean, do Leinster have a problem at 10?
You're quoting me, have we? I think Leinster and Ireland have a problem at 10.
Yeah, like I think 2 years ago, 18 months ago, Leinster probably should have invested more into what's his name? Ginger Centre. Occasionally plays a 10. Frawley, yeah. I actually thought he has it in him. You know, he doesn't have to kick from the tee.
His kicking game is... Yeah, but his kicking game is in control of the game. It's poor.
Is it stronger than Ross Byrne, though?
I don't rate it. He's... Anyone stronger than Ross Byrne?
But then the other thing is...
No, I've never rated him. Like, I would put Billy Burns above Ross Byrne. Well, it's easy when you're in a side as dominant as Leinster been at Patrick.
I think I could do a job in the 10 there, like.
Yeah, I think Stephen Hawking could do a job at 10 sometimes. Some days when Leinster are playing. Like, it's like when Leinster are playing like the Dragons, and no disrespect to the Dragons fans, like, and they've been pumped. Like, how can you look bad at fly half? The answer is you probably can't. And maybe that's a bit of a disrespectful comment, but I just think, yeah,
Ross Byrne. Another thing that came up in conversation last night, it's off, well, it's kind of Leinster, but Carpy never should have made that move to 10. That was the beginning of the end of his career. He was a better 15 all day long, whether he liked it or not. It's like telling that kid that at, you know, 12 years of age, you want to be a striker and you want to be Ronaldo or Messi or whatever, that's fair enough. But you're actually 6'2" and you're a little bit of a lump and you're a stocking, so play centre back and you'll make it as a national international. Do you know what I mean? It's someone, no one sat down and had
I
that
I wonder how much of that decision was his. I wonder how much.
Because he's by far a better 15 than he is at out half.
It was back to what I said years ago. Should never have let Ian Madigan leave the country.
Yeah.
It's probably too late from now, but.
That's definitely too late from now. What's he, 34 probably?
And I know he came back to Ulster, and the first two years he's back at Ulster, he was decent. But I don't know what we're going to do. I think it could be a dark few years
for us. The sorry state of affairs is our second best 10 will never play for Ireland again. On form, the second best Irish 10 is playing in the Guinness Premiership and will never play for Ireland again. His name cannot be mentioned.
I think you have him rated way too highly. The second best 10 in this country is Jack Carty in the Kitchen Sports Round.
I'd say it's close. Okay, maybe he's third best.
He's definitely better than what Leinster have at the moment. Well, there's reasons for that, though.
Yeah.
We'll park there. Because
we don't want to lose the whole female family.
Finishing of a season. No, all one of them. Yeah, look, I think... That's my say on it. Look, it was a bad day for Leinster, obviously, but as an Irish rugby fan, you do have to be a little bit happy
for
Rog.
What happens next season? For our four provinces in terms of Europe.
Well, Connacht, you want to go out and give an absolute rattle into the Challenge Cup. I would like to reserve comment on Munster until I see how they handle the off season. Ulster are at the precipice. They're about to start slowly sliding back down.
Round three at Munster is good. I think we had this discussion. But I don't think he's going to turn it around drastically. I think it'll be a long slog. An upward trajectory, but it'll be a long time.
I think he's the first man in a rebuild, but he's the right man to get Munster back to what their essence is, like that Munster essence. like say when they won the Heineken Cup in 2006, when they won the Heineken Cup in 2008, that like quintessential monsterness, that fight, the you know, stand up and fight like men, that whole mentality and stuff like that. He's the perfect man because it's a similar mentality in Leicester to get them back. And then it's probably maybe someone, and I don't want to be like discrediting Graham Trent because I do think he's a good coach, but I think it's maybe someone a little bit more astute who's going to come in on the back of that and bring them back to kind of like a perennial powerhouse in Europe. You're obviously always afraid of playing Munster in Europe, as Toulouse very well known, and they get beaten by Leinster, but I think Munster can awful lot out of them. And look, I think Munster won't be far off the pace for much longer.
Ulster or more Munster, sorry. And then you mentioned Ulster on the slide, you reckon? Munster.
I think they've kind of hit the precipice. There's a few players already looking at leaving this year. There's a few players who probably they need to get rid of. Like, I think Rob Herring's pretty much done. So Hooker, it's a key position for Ulster, how they play their rugby. Cooney is getting on. And look, they have fast, like they've some fantastic back players, and like James Hume, I really rate. Obviously, Robert Balakune is going to steal some headlines, and Mickey Lowry, I'm a huge fan of. He plays 10 kilos heavier than he actually is.
I know they just don't have it. They're great, they're players, and if you put one in Leinster, like you put a Lowry in Leinster, or you put a Balakune in Leinster, they're superstars. But playing in that system and that squad, I'm not sure.
You're relying on Billy Barnes and John Cooney.
Yeah, and who can have very off days. Cooney can be very, very good or just mediocre.
Yeah. As can Billy Barnes, to be fair to him. Maybe not in an Irish jersey, but in an Ulster jersey, he has days where he is unreal. Like, they played the Sharks final game of the regular season to try and, I think, to jump up the rankings or whatever, and Billy Barnes was on that night, and he was brilliant.
Is there anything, do you think any of the Leinster boys could move north? From a 10 point of view, I'm saying now, like, Johnny's got another year, you've got Ross, Harry, how many have you got behind that?
Well, like here's the thing, like we were sold as fed lies at the start of the season that Harry Byrne was Ireland 10 incumbent. He made a few Irish squads. He hasn't played.
Yeah, thanks Brian O'Driscoll for that.
And from what I've seen, he was still picked in the Irish squad in the November internationals. He didn't play in, but he was in that squad. So it's obviously a well-held opinion, but I haven't seen it. And now I'm just a schmuck with a mic, but I don't know. If he is the Zaire incumbent, surely he needs to at least be the second choice Leinster fly half, at which point Ross Byrne probably should move on.
Yeah.
Given the age he is, the experience he has, and what he wants for the rest of his career, he probably.
If he plays up in,
but I don't see that happening either.
But if he did play up in Ulster, it's a nice place to play with a little less pressure, in terms of what's expected, and might build up the confidence nicely for the Irish shirt.
But maybe we should move on.
So in terms of where they end up, Ulster, do they even get out of the group? Next.
In Champions Cup next year. Yeah, we need to see what the group is. It's to be all. There could be in a group with the Ospreys, Benetton, and low enough for French side. And I'd be saying okay.
And then we've got a chance. Leinster finalists again next year.
You think?
Johnny's last chance.
Semi-finalists. Yeah. As good as, yeah, don't want to jinx them or anything like that, but I would say I'd be expecting them to at least make the semis.
Hey, look, while we're here, we might say, what do you think of the summer internationals?
They're always a strange one, aren't they? I think the rugby public here definitely kind of switches off, and then, oh, geez, yeah, Ireland are playing New Zealand in the morning.
Yeah, it's strange. Like, nice half seven start to watch the Ireland All Blacks.
Yeah. Dirty fry and a leftover can from the night before. Whereas we're very much tuned in for the November internationals. And
I think the way things have gone back end of the season, that 3-0 to the All Blacks, I think. I don't see us getting one.
I don't know. Like, you could be right. I mean, history would suggest you are bang on the money. Summer internationals are always hard because your players are coming off the end of a season. So anyone that's been injured is injured. Anyone that has a requirement to get surgery is going to get it done instead of probably going to summer internationals because of the limited time they have. But I give us a chance of getting one. Give us a chance of getting one. Not only we win the series, but a chance of winning that test. Be good to shut the All Blacks up, saying that we've never... haven't come in 12 years or something like that, so yeah. But look, why don't we wrap the rugby chat up there now? There's another final I think we have to at least mention.
Another final to mention? The playoff final?
Yeah. No. There's another one last night.
Oh, that one. Yeah, look, it was for the neutral like yourself, possibly a good final. For Liverpool fans like myself, I think it was poor. First half wasn't too bad. Second half was poor from a Liverpool point of view. Courtois was outstanding. Look, it seems as though Mane's gone. It looks like Fabrizio Romano reporting today that it's done. He's finished. Although Manny did say last night that he owes the fans a Champions League, which I thought was a strange comment to make given that the situation that he's in. Look, I think we do have to cash in on one of them because I feel like we're going to lose one of them for free. When I say one of them, I mean Salah or Mane. I do think we do need to cash in on one of them because of the club, that working class money, that American money. So now is the time is probably right to move on out. I just fear that we might be moving on the wrong one because I think Salah looks like he's starting to dip a little bit. I think he might have had his peak.
I think I'd cash in on
really,
both.
Yeah.
Because both are at maximum value. You're also having Man City very close in the Premier League and having lost in a Champions League final. You're at your maximum kind of attractiveness to players.
Yeah, but the Salah Mane thing, you're right, yes and no. Is there value at the top because they've only got 12 months left though? So, because they've got 12 months on their deals, it's kind of like, to get maximum value, I think if you sign one of them now on a 3-year, by all accounts, Salah wants more in terms of the length of deal, and that's why it hasn't been signed. I think it said he wanted 4 years or something like that, whereas Liverpool, you know the way they have this sign thing when you're 30 years of age, and they don't want to, all that sort of stuff. But if you get Salah on a 4-year now and there's a similar run next season, I think his top value is the end of next year. And his form just doesn't... Mane has better form going into the window. The only thing I would say is by sending Mane apparently to Bayern Munich, there's other players there that you'd probably like. The likes of Leroy Sané will be a good addition if there was a deal to be struck. That's the other option. Gnabry, I think... poor at Arsenal. Young
at Arsenal.
Who did he go to then? Didn't he have another stint in the Premier League? Someone? No?
Fulham.
Alone, yeah. But he seems to come full circle now and be alright. Now, the other thing for Liverpool is you've obviously got to fit Luis Diaz in. You've got to fit Fabio Carvalho in. And that's with Jota and Firmino battling out there too. Like, that's if Firmino stays. I could definitely see Bobby heading off to Barcelona or something like that.
Will he go Barca or will he go back to Brazil?
I don't see him going back to Brazil. I think he's too young.
I don't see him in a Barca shirt.
Maybe not a Barca shirt.
Anyway, maybe Serie A?
Maybe. He could stay. I think he was unfortunate here with injury. And Jota did have a good spell early to mid-season. But...
he the wrong time.
Yeah, Jota had a really bad dip in form last month, 2 months. It's been poor. He's been poor. Interesting times. Definitely interesting times. The final though, yeah, look, it's disappointing. There was one thing that really stood out that I had a problem with was we got a free kick, 95th minute, and the referee blew for full time on an attacking free kick, which I thought was very, very strange, particularly given that Madrid had a similar free kick in the 92nd minute and took 90 seconds to take it. You're always going to get that, but to stop at 95 after two very pretty long stoppages in that 5 minute additional time, I thought was poor. I think his performance overall was quite poor. Yeah,
the referee, oh, I disagree entirely. I thought the referee was really? Brilliant. And I'm not just saying to rub salt in the wounds or anything. No, I thought he refed that. He let like just enough he did goal. Leave enough. Like, I also would have said the Benzema goal probably should have
stood. It was very I understood why it wasn't given. And if it was the other end, I'd be spitting flames, but that's I could see why it wasn't given. Just, like, because the momentum of the initial pass was from the Madrid player, whereas Benzema was in an offside position when that was touched. If the intention of the Liverpool player was an intentional pass, then...
But then it was knocked. It was knocked forward by a Liverpool player and then knocked back by a Liverpool player.
There's two deflections, so
How far back do we go?
But neither the touch from a Liverpool player was deliberate, if you like. I think that was the piece, wasn't it? Like,
yeah, which...
I also think Becker was on the dizzy water as well. Like, he had a couple of spells there where he came out of the box and you're kind of thinking, what is he doing? He has about one a game, but last night he had two, and that one... For that one, I don't know if you noticed the knee that he got on the ball. I just thought, how did he manage to even... Anyway...
Was there an element of fatigue in
it? It looked like a team that played every minute of football, which it was. Like, they've played every minute.
There's also, look, the pre-match issues. A lot of Liverpool players I'd seen interviewed, Andy Robson just springs to mind, had all mentioned that their families were involved in the issues outside.
How much they knew is different. So, like, we don't know how much they knew.
Well, Andy Robertson knew going into the game. Okay. His brother had called him. Or sent him a text or something like that. So he knew going into the game. Now, I didn't think he was poor, to be honest with Andy Robertson. I thought Trent had a shocker.
His delivery was really bad. I think he hit the front man on the corners.
Delivery was poor. He was a fall for a goal.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I thought Trent. Which is not like Trent, to be fair. And I'll be honest here. I'm obviously not a Liverpool fan, a neutral fan. I felt very sorry for Liverpool because the football they played this year, not to disrespect the competitions, but to only have an FA Cup and a League Cup, I thought was undeserving. Regardless of what you want to say and stuff like that, they are the two lesser of the four trophies on play, and I thought they deserved one of the bigger two.
I know we spoke about last week, do you still think they overachieved?
I think they overachieved in the Premiership race given how far back they were. Was it late November? I keep saying Christmas, but 14 I think
points
they
behind
kind
at
of
that point.
Closed. I think they closed the gap over, like, by the time we got to Christmas. They, like, not completely, but they had sizably put a dent in it. So I think in terms of the Premiership race, when you look back on it and say if they nick a result against Spurs, they're champions.
Yeah. And the season is seen as a roaring success.
Yeah. And even if they lose that Champions League final, you're like, and ultimately if they'd won the Premier League, I think they would have won the Champions League. I think there's the momentum of that. And
it's funny, last night they didn't lose to Real Madrid, they lost to Carlo Ancelotti. If you look at the stats and the way that's what it was like, all credit to them, by the way. I'm not saying, like, that's football's football, there's many ways to skin a cat, like, and all that sort of stuff, but it was just, to be fair, and then Courtois with the saves, like, you can't allow for that. You just can't, like, just the one off the forearm and the one off the post, you know. Yeah. I don't know if Liverpool I know Klopp, and that it's great to hear him after the game. I don't know if you heard that one. He's like, where's the final next year? Istanbul? Book the hotel. I thought that was great for fans. I just don't know. It's tough to get that energy back. That, like, to have another season where you play every game, you'd want to be going out of the FA Cup and the Carabao quite early.
Here's another caveat to next season, which we don't know how it's going to affect. We have a mid-season World Cup. Like, that's, we just don't know what impact that's going to have on any side,
particularly the top six.
Yeah, we just don't know.
You would have to think. You would have to think. January will be West Ham's month.
Yeah, probably. But here's another one for you as well. Is like just the concept of this is, are we set for the best January transfer window ever? Because on the back of a World Cup, there's all these kind of mad signings. So are we gonna have the maddest January? Now that usually takes place over the course of summer, like, but for a single month, are we gonna have a bizarre January?
The World Cup kicks off in what, November, is it? Yeah,
I think so. Yeah, and ends close to Christmas.
So the Premier League starts 4th week of July, 3rd week of July this year,
something crazy. Yeah,
it'll be interesting. It's, as you said, I never thought about the transfer window side of it, but if you're looking at those teams that have peripheral international players, they're probably the ones you're going to look at in January, going, you know, get your money on them to have a strong January. Or the you know, the ones that don't have any internationals, I suppose.
Or of internationals.
But if you look at how the players of the African Cup of Nations were affected, like Salah hasn't found form since he came back. I think he's got one smoking play, or maybe twice.
And I would say Mane was good.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't say he was his normal.
So you're looking at that for the whole league, or for a lot of the league.
Yeah, and I would have the opinion that British players and Scandinavian players would be more harshly impacted because of the heat.
Yeah, poor Scotland. If they win, don't they play this week to get in against Ukraine?
Yeah. So, yeah, that'll be an interesting topic. But look, Nils add on the
floor. No, nothing. We go again.
No. Go again. We go again. Yeah, look, I suppose it's kind of, we're finishing up the season. Bottom feeder Atlee can't be with us. He obviously had his debut episode of his new podcast, Spray the Ball, and I think it debuted somewhere at something like 3 on the Apple Basketball Ireland charts, and he's partying like a rock star, he thinks he is. But I suppose it draws our attention to the other kind of programs and stuff that are on the mid-season slump. Obviously, this would be the main feature, but we do have the Irish NRL show, Spray the Ball, and we do have Huddles and Stout, which is an NFL-based podcast coming in early August. So give the Instagram channel a follow to kind of see all the productions coming. In terms of yourself, coach, what are you looking forward to most this summer?
A lot of the important action, yeah. I was actually at the game myself on Friday night, Rovers and Shells. Great to see Damien Duff back in the dugout. Great atmosphere, just over 7,000 people, so if that can be kept up for the summer, be fantastic. Looking forward to the hurling. I'd like to see Wexford maybe give it a bash. Don't think it's going to happen. I think that's, I'm away with the fairies there on that one. Can't wait to see Kerry pummel the Dubs. Really looking forward to that. A bit of NFL pre-season and college football will be back. Very much looking forward to that.
Yeah. NBA finals.
Very nervous. Don't know if you've seen
big game 7 tonight.
Again, won't be able to stay up. Awkward time. They should consider all the Celtics fans in Europe.
All the South Dublin.
Yeah.
The South Dublin.
I don't know if you saw the Draymond Green interview last night. Did you? They kind of asked him, you know, who you think you're gonna play. He's like, well, I know we're gonna play the Boston Celtics. I'll tell you, I know we're gonna play.
He kind of a little bit of a fire under
Peter. But it's not good for the Celtics. It's definitely not good for the Celtics that he said that. That will give every Miami Heat player fuel. Particularly.
Well, it did. That was nearly into game 6. My fears are kind of on the Celtics. This is after game 5. I'd listened to Colin Cowherd. It's game 5. No, sorry, it was game 4. Colin Goward had a stat that, and I mentioned this on the other podcast, the other fellow the other day, but the Celtics had won or drawn 13 of the 16 quarters, and the series was tied 2-2. They're very good. They've a top 3 young player in the league who's probably, in reality, this what we're seeing from Jason Tatum is year 1 of prime. So he will get better, but it's going to be a more gradual increase. But he's in his prime years. And they just can't put sides to the sword. They just can't put the foot on the throat, which is a concern for me, because it means they're going to be more fatigued, haven't played more games.
It's very very similar to Liverpool actually situation with the Celtics. You know, poor start of season to fall a good bit behind, pedal to the metal then for a few months, and I'm just worried that they might reach a burnout point tonight. But we'll see. Warriors are like, it's like watching the Toon Squad, isn't it? Like in Space Jam, they're just class.
Well, they're, since they got rid of Kevin Durant, they're very likable again.
Yeah.
As in, you can't really, like, Draymond Green's a trash talker, but he's actually kind of likable. Everyone kind of likes Steph, and everyone kind of likes Clay. Do you know that they're a very likable bunch?
I don't know if anyone would want to see the Warriors in the Heat in the finals. I think everyone wants to see Celtics Warriors.
Stylistically, it's very interesting. Whoever comes out of the East and the Warriors, because neither of them are really going to play a similar style to the Warriors. This kind of long range shooting game. Because, like, if you look at the Celtics' last two series, they're very physical series, which is not how the Warriors play. So it's going to be very interesting stylistically, whoever they play. Obviously, you're going to root for the Celtics, but Miami Heat have. It's been a strange series because they've just been blowout after blowout after blowout, but yet the series is still tied 3-3. It just doesn't make sense. It's a confusing series.
The Heat just feel like a tourist attraction. It's kind of like the Knicks in New York. It's a tourist attraction. It's. There's no substance anymore.
As an
organization, they're there and they've obviously won championships and they've had Wade and LeBron and
Pat Riley and they've
aired. It's just, I don't know.
They still have the same GM and head coach as they did, I think.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see. Celtics green. Yeah. I just hope. I'm just really worried about tonight.
You could have a stinker of a Monday morning with this joint on top. And if it is, I won't communicate with you.
The half days all around.
And then obviously the NRL as well. Look, mate, the Irish NRL show as well, week on week, and then just loads of Aussie rugby league action. It's glorious. But look, I think the last thing to just touch on is, have you seen this? I'm not going to give too much on it, but it's a bit of a bizarre interview from Thibaut Courtois at the end of full time. He kind of went a bit, I don't know, Richard Sherman in the NFL. It's like, put some respect on my name. It was very, very weird. And that's all from me.
It's all from me.
Thank you for listening all year round. Have a lovely summer. And we'll see you in the early on.
Holla.